B-Pod Studios.
This is the home of the Bruins. With the Bruins. Zoe and Bertrand are live at Warrior Ice Arena on 98.5, the Sports Hub. And streaming on the Sports Hub app.
No, it's not emotional. You know what I mean? I just know what's ahead. It's about focused on the Patriots and how I get this football team prepared. You're basically walking into the Vipers' den. You know, we're going to have to go on the road and beat a team that's won a lot of playoff games up there.
Welcome in to Zolak and Bertrand from Warrior on this Thursday. 2 days away from the wild card round and the Patriots taking on the Titans Saturday night at Gillette, which we have two pairs of tickets for today. First one coming up at 11:30, second pair at 1:30. You have two chances to win Patriots tickets for Saturday night's game right here on this show today, 11:30 and 1:30. There's no Zoe today, as you just heard Hardy say a moment ago. Zoe is on vacation today. Dan Shaughnessy will join us at 11, but Hardy and I will hold things down.
Yeah, we'll be good.
We'll take care of it. That was Mike Vrabel that we just heard, head coach of the Titans, former Patriot, Super Bowl winner here in New England, three times for Mike Vrabel. He knows a thing or two about winning in the playoffs as a player. Now he gets a chance to do it as a head coach against his former team and against his former coach in Bill Belichick. I find this to be one of the fascinating angles of this game, one of the very entertaining angles of this game. And we heard these guys talk a lot over the summer months when they had their joint practices together. They were down in Tennessee. And so that first round of talking about what it's like to be out on the same field with Bill and that stuff's sort of been out of the way. This week, Mike Vrabel, I think, has gone to great lengths to completely separate himself from his time as a Patriot.
Yeah, he is. This isn't, a loving reunion and talking about his time here. And I don't think a lot of coaches would fall into it when you're talking about the playoffs. Regular season, you might. You might have somebody who's acting, I don't know, almost a little starstruck about, you know, coming back and playing the Patriots and blah, blah, blah. But for Vrabel, I don't know that he's the sentimental sort to begin with, and certainly not this week. I mean, he's still going to, you know, obviously joke around a little bit. We've already heard some of it. But for him, no. This is not a happy reunion. This is a game that he fully expects to come in here and compete in and win. And I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of grab ass going on between these two teams this week, and especially from Vrabel's side.
Yeah, you could sort of tell that he wants this story and this part of the story to die prior to this game.
Yeah.
And he just keeps talking up the aspect of how good they are, how hard it is to win in New England at Gillette. But on his conference call, I thought that maybe there's more to it. I thought maybe there's more to him wanting to separate himself from his time with the Patriots. Maybe Mike Vrabel is motivated by the fact that I don't think it ended all that well for him here. For a guy who was as important to the three Super Bowl winning teams as he was after coming from Pittsburgh, you know, his sort of value to this team was immense.
Yep.
And he's been up for Patriots Hall of Fame stuff. You know, he's been mentioned in that conversation before. But he was unceremoniously traded to the Kansas City Chiefs as a throw-in.
Yeah.
Along with Matt Cassel.
Yep.
And that trade followed a season in which Mike Vrabel had some comments ahead of the CBA expiring after owners opted out. But this is Mike Vrabel on his conference call just a couple of days ago. Questions from Chris Gasper about the Patriot way and about his sort of time here. Listen to this.
Mike, what does the phrase Patriot way mean to you? And do you remember the first time you heard it?
Isn't that the street sign? Isn't that the street the movie theater is on?
Probably.
I don't know. I didn't come up with it, so I don't know.
I mean, you know, obviously your performance when you were here and the guys you played with, whether you guys use that phrase or not, you guys were a big part of that. And it's still something that's part of the culture here. So, I mean, what does it mean to you from a football standpoint, and how is it reflected in Bill's teams?
I mean, they're well-coached, fundamentally sound football team, play with great technique, great effort. They're good tacklers on defense. The offensive line plays with great technique and understanding. Very limited fuss, mistakes. You know, it seems like there are all the players are in tune. They communicate well together. They're good in, you know, critical situations or situational football.
That is Mike Vrabel, who's so reluctant to even talk about anything Patriot way, anything to do with sort of the culture that was established in the time period that he was a player here. He doesn't want to touch it.
He's not even talking about, like, the names. He's making this very business-like.
But that first thing.
Oh, yeah.
About the movie theater.
Oh, yeah.
That was not done by mistake.
No, no.
2008, Mike Vrabel. Here's a story from the Herald.
This is Ron Borges.
Ron Borges in 2008. Mike Vrabel walks out of Gillette Stadium every day and marvels at what his boss, Patriots owner Robert Kraft, has built. Unfortunately for Kraft and the other NFL owners, he also understands what it means. Vrabel looks up at the high-end Patriot Place Mall. I don't think we've called it that since it opened, but it's funny to go back. Patriot Place Mall. Patriot Place, a place filled with top-dollar restaurants, a wide array of expensive shops, a state-of-the-art movie theater, and a buzzing music venue, and wonders where people think the money to build it came from, even though he already knows it came from his blood and sweat and that of guys just like him. Take one long look around Patriot Place, and, well, it makes a guy think. Yesterday was supposed to mark the deadline for opting out of the CBA extension that was signed 2 years ago, but NFL owners beat that deadline by 6 months, voting unanimously in May to bail on the final 2 years, claiming, as one owner put it, it's too rich. The owners were thinking the players were making a little bit too much money at the time.
Right.
And we know how this all turned out, but this is what Vrabel was saying. It's like Chris Rock says, Vrabel joked. You think Shaq is rich? What about the guy who pays Shaq? Vrabel doesn't know how rich these folks are, which is part of the problem looming over what could be a contentious negotiation. And he had a bunch more quotes. He says, we asked to see their books and they won't open them. It's tough to form a partnership with someone who won't show us his books. These franchises are worth billions. You open USA Today and they get every player's salary listed. You go to the Forbes magazine and they try and guess what the teams are worth. He was very critical of Patriot Place being there. And he talked about raising ticket prices. He mentioned the team raising ticket prices,
yep.
Saying they raised the ticket prices, but they didn't raise our salaries.
Right. They raised the ticket prices 25%, but the salaries don't go up 25%. Nobody gave Tom Brady a 25% raise. The fans are paying 25% more to see the entertainers, but the entertainers aren't being paid 25% more. That needs to be talked about.
You look about what they've built here in Foxborough, and every bit of it is tied to the team. But none of the revenue is included. I'm curious about how that goes. How'd this get built? He asked about Patriot Place back in 2008, Hardy. Where did the revenue come from? The financing's based on the value of the team and the ties to it, but they keep all that revenue. And so he went right after teams, owners, and because he played for the Patriots, he specifically went after his owners for building Patriot Place.
Now,
and how they did it with the money and the team that had success on the field, success that Mike Vrabel created. And then all of a sudden, after that season, Mike Vrabel was traded away.
Right.
Now, and it all led, you know, how do you think ownership took those comments?
Well,
you think they loved him?
No, and here's where he's wrong. He said, we understand they're businessmen. They have to make sound business decisions, but we're also a union and a strong one. No, you're not, Mike.
That was a lie.
No, you're not.
That was a lie. That was some bull crap.
That NFL union is a joke for what the players have to go through week in and week out, and what other players in professional sports are afforded, and the benefits they get out of guaranteed contracts.
You've got to remember
their time off. I'm like, come on, man.
2008. So that's 12 years ago now, right?
Yeah.
You've got to remember they were replacing Gene Upshaw.
Yeah.
They were looking for their next guy. It was before Demaurus Smith. There was sort of this attitude among players like, this is it. This is the time we make the union strong. We're going to get a new leader. We're going to put our foot down. They were all talking among themselves about how great of a union they were going to be, and they were not. So that ended up not being true. He may have been buying into some of the rhetoric being spouted by some of the top players in the league, but that was all nonsense.
Yeah.
No, you caved like you always do.
No, he was trying to build their position by presenting themselves from a position of strength, and I mean, he probably even knew that.
Yeah. And then folded like a cheap suit, like they typically do. But is this his revenge now? Him coming back. He wants his revenge against New England. Vrabel wants his win here on Saturday. I think there's no lack of motivation for that guy, even without this extra element of, you know what? I don't like how it ended up there.
Yes.
I shouldn't have ended the way it did for me there.
Sure. He's got plenty of personal motivation in this. Now, how that factors into what takes place on Saturday night, you know, how much do the coaches have to do with it in terms of, you know, once the game is being played? And as we start to talk more about the game, Beetle, it's going to come down to, you know, matchups, essentially. And will the Patriots' defense be able to right the ship after what happened against Miami? Will the offense be able to score on Vrabel? But I would say this. If the Titans end up losing on Saturday, it won't be because Mike Vrabel was in any way, shape, or form not motivated to get the win. Oh, he's motivated, and I'm sure he's doing everything he can to get his players to feel the same motivation that he's feeling right now. Does any of that factor in?
Idea about the guy's edge.
Oh,
the edge that he's got.
It's
12 years later, he's still hanging on to that thing.
Yeah.
Isn't that the street that the movie theater's on? The Patriot Way?
Oh, God.
You want me to sit here and you know, talk about how great Bill is and how great the Patriots are and the culture that, oh, we as players sort of helped build? At least, you know, they gave him that credit in the question, and he's thinking, yeah, no, how's the movie theater doing?
Oh,
you know, I mean, that he's still hanging on to that thing.
It's a nice theater.
He has not let go. The music venue is closed, but, you know.
Is it officially closed?
It is. I walked by it the other day.
What goes on? What goes on?
They're putting something new in there.
Oh.
Yeah.
Something nice, I bet.
Something esports related.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's the music, the state-of-the-art music venue is not there anymore. They've closed up shop. So factor that in, Vrabel. Revenues are down. He's still hanging on to that thing. All these years later.
The last paragraph in that Borges column.
Yeah.
When Vrabel ponders Upshaw's words and Goodell's insistence the CBA is not working, it's difficult for him not to look around his own workplace and think, somebody built a hell of a mall with that 40%. Talking about the 40% because we're getting 60% of the revenue. I don't want the owners to believe there's a Santa Claus. There isn't one. At the end of the day, I think they'll have to learn to survive on their 40%. He said somebody built it, or Borges says he's got to be looking around and thinking, it's like, yeah, they're doing okay with that 40%.
Yeah, they're doing all right with that.
The movie theater is on.
Oh, that's a shot right there. According to,
you know what, Vrabel, then go buy a football team. You know, that's what the owners say, and that's what most people in business would say. Oh, yeah, you want to get rich like the owners that go. Go build yourself in business up for a few decades and then have the requisite money available to you to buy your own team. And then you can be a part of it, too. Yeah, we're not going to lie. It's great. You should get one.
617-779-0985. As you know, Mike Vrabel and the Tennessee Titans won last year in Nashville. We'll take a look back at that, why the Patriots were stupid on that day, and how former coaches, Belichick assistants and former Belichick players have done against Bill. What's the record on that, and what has it been in the playoffs? We'll get to both of those things with your calls. 617-779-0985 coming up next.
Zolak and Bertrand are overlooking the rink at Warrior Ice Arena on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Are you stupid or something?
Stupid is, stupid does, sir.
Taking a shot at Josh Gordon, who had a big cushion in front of Adoree Jackson.
Ball sails on Brady again, too. I don't know if it's the footing or if he sees Gordon fall. I mean, we gotta change your shoes at halftime. Everybody.
Two-man rush, a throw left, and he sails it incomplete with 2 seconds to go.
And Brady is screaming. Whoever's running that comeback, is that Hogan? No sense of urgency out there. And he's screaming at Hogan to come out of the break. Wow, he's still giving it to Hogan.
Toward the playing field. Only to step back. Offense stays on.
Wake up.
Looks toward Edelman. Throws it instead right for a receiver down the sideline, Gordon. And no chance. He was well covered by Adoree Jackson.
Are you kidding me?
He was not open.
I don't even understand the call. Third and four. You're trying to go vertical on third and four. I'd rather run him on a slant with his size.
High hanging punt. Jackson is going to let it bounce behind him, and the ball is going to roll into the end zone. And doesn't that tell the story? Because Matthew Slater, as good as there is a gunner in this league,
he's got to get to the goal line.
Hold up.
Boy, if this isn't a tape for you to look at your core special teamers and say something isn't right here.
It is fourth and inches, and Tennessee are trying to guard against the sneak. Brady under center, wide behind him, and early movement. The Pats are going to face a fourth and long.
I ask you if this is worse than Detroit.
Offense number 61. 5-yard penalty. Good fourth down.
This is 800 times worse than Detroit, this game.
You stupid or something.
You can't get out of your own way at times today.
I'm as stupid guys.
34-10. Tennessee won that game. And they moved to 5-4 with that, by the way, with that win. They had a winning record through those first 9 weeks of the season. They had Marcus Mariota as their quarterback. And the Patriots went there, and they struggled, is what they did. By the way, Tennessee in that game had 150 yards rushing on the ground. They split the work between Derrick Henry and Deion Lewis. Deion Lewis had the majority of the carries. 20 of the 36 carries for the team were from Deion Lewis for Tennessee that day. But Derrick Henry averaged 5.3 yards a carry in that one.
Mm-hmm.
And now he's the NFL's rushing leader.
Mm-hmm.
And he's big, and he's physical, and he moves well. That could be a problem.
Well, it could be a problem for a team that has had trouble against the run this season. But after what I saw last week, and a team that literally can't run the ball in the Miami Dolphins, Ryan Fitzpatrick came in as their rushing leader, and they didn't run the ball. They ran it a little bit, but they didn't have to. They beat you with the pass. So how about this, Beetle? You know what I'm worried about?
What are you worried about?
I don't know what to worry about.
You're worried that you don't know what to worry about.
I really don't.
I get it.
After that Dolphins game, I don't know what I should be worried about
anymore. I know what I'm worried about.
What are you worried about?
I'm worried about Derrick Henry and them running the ball.
Okay.
And just eating
That's
up
a good
the
worry.
And
That's
eating the clock, keeping the ball, limiting the number of offensive drives for the Patriots, and going about it that way.
They could very easily do it that way. And
when they have success with it, they're smart enough to stick with it.
Yes.
Unlike other teams,
right,
that the Patriots have lucked out, that teams have gotten away from it.
Right.
That just would, keep running the ball.
That would go away from it. And against this team and against that defense, I would say, okay. Normally, I would say, okay, you can at least hang your hat on the fact that maybe you'll be able to hang with them scoring wise. And when you do get the ball back, even if they keep it on the field for a long time and they start running the ball and they stick with the run and they chew up a lot of clock, you'll be able to get the ball back and maybe score quicker than they did and manage the clock that way. But with this short week that you've given yourself now, with that loss against Miami and the fact that your guys are so banged up right now, and Edelman looks the way he does, and Mohamed Sanu is still out there doing a lot of Mohamed Sanu-type things this season, I think they have enough requisite talent to get out there and to score enough to hang with them. But I'm not sure. A lot of it's going to boil down to health, and you screwed yourself by not giving yourself an extra week off, and you're double screwed now by the short week that you've been given. Which none of this had to happen. Just beat Miami at home. Beat Ryan Fitzpatrick and the Dolphins at home on Sunday. And so much of this stuff you don't have to worry about. You'd have plenty of worry looming over you waiting for that what's going to happen in the second round. But you don't have that benefit right now. Now you had to try and get yourselves right a day less than usual against a team that's coming in here. And as we said a little while ago, Mike Vrabel really, really would love to get a win against this team on that field. It would be sweeter to him than winning at home. Oh, my God. They come into Gillette Stadium, surrounded by the mall, the movie theater, and everything else.
High-end restaurants. Nothing says high-end like a Red Robin.
No, I love Red Robin.
I do, too. But
yum.
My kids sing the jingle. They've never been there. They've never been there. They sing the jingle. Red Robin. Yum.
The Royal Red Robin Burger. It's got a fried egg on it.
Bobby's in Bedford. Bobby.
Hey, boys. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.
Couple things. I couldn't help but think back to a young Bill Belichick, and that's what Mike Vrabel sounded like on that answer to that question. So that's
in what way? In what way?
It was very curt. It was very smart. Like he was kind of jabbing maybe Parcells when Parcells was he was coaching against him, and that's exactly what I thought about.
Okay.
Secondly, I'd like to know what Mike's position is on the CBA now that he's on the management side of things, because if he doesn't think his players are overpaid and he's trying to get better players in there now, I think he might not be the right coach because his position has to have changed, and I don't think he has the same position that he had when he was a player.
I doubt it. I don't know why that would change. The argument with the owners is about the slice of the pie, right?
Yes.
It's about the percentage of the revenue. So if the salary cap is one number versus another, it's the same number that every team is dealing with. Like I don't understand how the CBA impacts a head coach when it comes to spending money. You're all on the same plane.
Yeah,
and every team is fully funded if they choose to fund their payroll.
I doubt that his mind has changed on this particular issue now that he has to, you know, worry about salary cap or they're two separate issues.
Like players are overpaid? No, they're not. Especially not in this league. They're not overpaid.
No.
And it was about what percentage of the revenue were they going to get?
Yeah.
Is it 40? Is it 50? Is it 51 in some league? You know, what is it? That's what the argument was about.
Right.
What percentage of the overall revenues do the players, all of them in the league, get?
And to Vrabel's point, I don't think it's just him against the owners. I don't think Vrabel just sits back and says, no, this is about the, you know, the greediness of owners and the way that it's about the entire system and the way it's set up about how certain players are paid, and it's not just about rookie deals, and it's not just about salary cap. It's everything and how it all works together. He's smart enough to understand that, you know, one is a direct result of the other, and he probably sees it as an overall league issue in terms of how the CBA was put together, and even though he called it a strong union, it's not, and how salaries are managed and the way the league is set up. It's not just the owners not deciding to spend the money. You know, according to the rules, you can only spend so much. So he understands all that.
And
he probably thinks it needs to be, it to some degree, blown up and reworked.
He was in a group of players in that era. Maybe Richard Seymour was in that group. He was certainly in that group. Guys who would say that, you know, maybe privately, that it was all about, you know, there was a lot of credit given to the coach, and it was like, hey, what about the players? And we've sort of seen this after the fact, where if you compare the number of Hall of Famers or guys that get consideration from the Patriots Super Bowl teams, the number's not exactly in line with other historically great franchises and dynasties.
Yep.
And so those guys were a little bit miffed at times about how they weren't getting enough credit for the success of the team. And he's always been one of those players' first coaches. And when he took the job in Tennessee and when he wins, he is a player's coach in the way that he is always quick to say, this is not about me, it's not about coaching, it's about players.
Yep.
He still feels that way. He still feels it's about players, even as a coach. 617-779-0985, the phone number for you. We'll get a check of the headlines. Shaughnessy is going to join us here at Warrior at 11. We've got our first pair of Patriots tickets at 11:30. Two chances to win today, 11:30 and 1:30. What's the latest on Josh McDaniels and the Cleveland Browns? We'll get to that coming up next.
Zolak and Bertrand are overlooking the rink at the Warrior Ice Arena on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Oh,
be honest, Hardy. I think Josh McDaniels is going to have a hard time finding a job this offseason. I think it's Carolina or bust right now. I do not think he's going to get that job in Cleveland if that's what he's looking for.
All right. You tell me why, and I'll tell you. I think it's going to be an issue for Josh McDaniels, too, but you go first.
Okay. Let me tell you the number one reason always when it comes to Cleveland. He makes sense. Therefore, they won't do it. Reason number one.
Okay.
They're a bunch of morons.
Yeah.
Their owner, Jimmy Haslam, doesn't know how to run a football team. So that's reason number one. It's Cleveland. They will inevitably screw it up. That's reason number one.
Fair enough.
Number two, it appears, and actually, is John Dorsey officially out, or is he just on his way out right now?
I believe on his way out.
All right. He's not officially fired yet. Oh, no, wait.
Is he done?
Officially fired now.
Okay.
Yes. Okay. No, that's official. But he was gone. We learned that a couple of days ago. So John Dorsey's out. And the other part is that Paul DePodesta, Jonah Hill, is going to... By the way, he doesn't look like Jonah Hill at all in real life. Like, he was reportedly pissed about the portrayal, and I don't blame him. I'm going to get a picture up of him. Yeah, just to show you.
But Dorsey, the GM in Cleveland, was.
Yeah.
Correct?
That's Paul DePodesta.
Yeah, that's it looks nothing like Jonah Hill. Yeah.
Right. So, DePodesta, it appears, is going to stay.
Okay.
Very analytical. He's an analytics guy, and he was in the process when they decided to go with Freddie Kitchens. He was against it. And we mentioned Stefanski the other day from Minnesota, how he could be the pairing there. That seems like he would have a sort of a leg up on the job. But in addition to that, I don't think McDaniels is a fit with DePodesta. Like, that's not going to work. And I think that's pretty obvious. That's not going to be the situation that works there for Cleveland. And Jimmy Haslam reportedly decided he could not have opposing forces within his organization. He couldn't have Paul DePodesta and John Dorsey because they're just opposites. John Dorsey is your classic, you know, do it by the football book. I'm a football guy. Thinker, and you've yep. got sort of the new school guy and the analytics guy in DePodesta, and they're going with DePodesta's sort of vision and his leadership now, which means McDaniels is not going to be a fit there. McDaniels is not going to want to work in a situation like that. DePodesta is not going to want him. And then today, we heard the most ridiculous thing to this point, that they now want to look at Urban Meyer, which is so Cleveland. It's probably going to happen now because that's just Cleveland. They'll just do that. So Urban Meyer is someone that they are considering out there in Cleveland right now.
Okay.
The good news for McDaniels is the Giants have asked for permission to talk to him, even though the Browns have too. I don't think it's going to matter. And there's still the Carolina job. But I don't think it's Cleveland. If Cleveland is the job he wants, I don't think it's going to be there for him. So it's going to have to be the Giants, and that is apparently going to involve Dave Gettleman. Don't do that, Josh. Oh, God. That would be a bad choice to go work with that guy. Or... probably the ideal one is Carolina. I don't know if he wants that one.
Okay.
But I think it's Carolina if he wants a job.
So the issue with Josh McDaniels is nobody's doubting him as a coach, I don't think. You know, he's got a track record now. Now, it didn't go well in Denver, and there's still the issue in my mind. You know, if I'm the one doing the hiring, I'm going to look at what happened with the Colts, okay? And that is going to – I'm going to have reservations about bringing the guy in and getting to the point where we've decided on him and all that stuff because of what happened with the Colts. It's just that's just being, you know, smart when it comes to your hiring. Is this guy going to back out at the last second and leave us in the lurch and leave us holding the bag and having to scramble around and not only find a coach, but find a coach that's going to be able to assemble a staff? That's one thing. But
by the way, Burt Breer says he's been assembling a staff behind the scene. He said that on our show pregame.
Right.
And he reiterated it this week.
And he said it last night on Early Edition.
Oh, there you go.
And look, if it's a loyal enough staff, maybe they don't care where you're going. And you can, but to me, you need to know where you're going before you can really even start having the conversation about assembling a staff. Hey, Beetle, you want to go do a show together somewhere, just me and you, pal?
Yeah.
Zove's off the rails. Yeah, turns out he's crazy. I don't know yet. I don't know where we're going yet, but you want to go do a show somewhere?
Okay.
Yeah, are you in?
Is it you and me?
Yeah, but I don't know where we're going. We might end up in Bakersfield, California. You want to go? Let me know. Let me know where we go. Right?
Assembly. It's a little different though when it's the NFL. Yeah, because I think if you know you're going to get a job of an NFL team, there's so few of these opportunities that
there's a finite number of positions. It. But you know, if he's looking for an offensive coordinator, there's some of these jobs that are, I guess, more desirable than others. Here's the other thing: would you want to go coach Cleveland right now? Would you want to coach those players?
No.
See, that's the thing I don't get.
But he would not choose it because of that. No coach would. Because a coach looks at it and says, first of all, I can coach. The last guy couldn't. Every coach that goes into a job feels that way. Oh, I have the answers. The other guy you had sucked, but I have the answers for you. I can coach.
See, this
is the last guy you had cannot coach. And the other thing is the roster can always change.
The roster can change.
And if you have control, which he wants to have a Belichick-type role, he knows he's going to be able to change his roster wherever he goes.
I heard this from Bert last night and from Gasper last night, and it's like, oh, he wants to coach Baker Mayfield. He wants a shot at coaching Baker Mayfield. He might not. He might look at Baker Mayfield and say, you know what? I really don't like the way this guy operates. Talent-wise, sure, but everything is skewed by working with Tom Brady and Bill Belichick for all these years and having, you know, someone else who's A, ultimately responsible, and B, the greatest quarterback to ever play the position. Eventually, of course, he's going to do it, and he's going to do it somewhere. The last thing, though, that I have to factor in when I'm thinking about this, and again, this is from the interviewer's side. If you're bringing in Josh McDaniels and you say, all right, Josh, well, you know, Patriots, wow, that's great. And you're the offensive coordinator for the Patriots. How many games did the offense win for the Patriots this year? How many games is the offense for your wins?
I don't think anyone's going to ask that.
They should.
I don't think they are, though.
They should.
This is what I think they're going to ask. And I said this the other day with Zoe. I said, and we were talking about the Browns. I said, if I were Jimmy Haslam or any NFL owner, and I were, let's say it's the Browns and you have Baker Mayfield, my question to Josh McDaniels about the offense wouldn't be about this year or anything to do with wins and losses. It would be about, how is it that you are going to adjust what we have heard so many times is a very complex offense and very difficult to learn,
yeah,
and requires these long adjustment periods for players, receivers, quarterbacks, whoever. How are you going to implement that and do it quick? Because I don't want to take another year of sucking because your offense is too complex. How are you going to implement that on day one? Have these guys up and running by September with your offense.
With a group of guys. Oh, two of them have played for you before. Great. How about everybody else who's never seen this before?
Yeah, so because I've got a quarterback that was drafted high. I've got a highly paid elite receiver on this team already. Actually got a couple of really good receivers. Great elite talent at the receiver position on that Browns team. How are you going to get these guys up and running day one?
Right.
Because we're not in a rebuild here. We have some players here. We've got who we think is our quarterback, and we've got receivers. How are you going to make that work ASAP?
And the last thing I'll say about McDaniels is this. I still think the best spot for him is with the Patriots. And it's probably going to take too long, and he doesn't want to wait that long. But to anyone who says, oh, you never want to take over for Belichick, you never want to be the guy after the guy. Well, someone's going to have to be. Does that mean everybody who's offered the head coach job for the Patriots, once Belichick steps down, is going to turn it down because no one wants to be the guy after the guy? Someone's going to take that job. And it might as well be McDaniels. It might as well be a guy who already knows the system and already has a relationship with ownership and has a lot of stuff already in place. I can't think of someone better to do it. But he's probably not going to wait that long because I think it's going to be 4 or 5 more years minimum.
Josh McDaniels got the win in Denver against Bill Belichick. I meant to give you this earlier. Belichick is 14-13 as a head coach when going up against a former assistant or former player. He is 12-13 in the regular season. That's a losing record against former coaches and former players who are now coaches. He's 2-0 in the playoffs. He beat Eric Mangini in 06, and he beat Bill O'Brien in 2016. He's got another one of those games coming up this weekend against Mike Vrabel. Josh McDaniels may have tried to separate himself from Bill Belichick the other day. I didn't pick up on this at first.
Okay, good.
But you will hear the sound, and you will hear what Josh McDaniels said himself. I didn't take it this way, but Jim Louth has opened my eyes. We'll get to it coming up next.
This is the home of the Bruins. The Bruins. Zoe and Bertrand are live at Warrior Ice Arena on 98.5, the Sports Hub, and streaming on the Sports Hub app.
Dan Shaughnessy will join us at 11. Bill Belichick's press conference coming up at 11 as well. And we'll go to that live in Foxborough ahead of Saturday's playoff matchup with the Titans. The other day on the conference call, Josh McDaniels was talking about that decision to pack it in before halftime and not use the timeouts and not try and get a score against the Dolphins. You know, I had read the printed quotes the other day and said, what is this? You know, don't question the coach. good luck with that, Josh. Sorry, but that's sort of the nature of any coaching job. You're going to be second-guessed on your decisions. And he was, you know, his intuition's always right. Yeah, no, I don't know how you defend that one. Well, here's the audio of it. And he was asked a simple, short question, and he had a very long answer. Here it is.
Why not a little more aggressive there at the end of the first half?
I think that's always a situation that's played, you know, with a lot of different factors that are considered. I never question coach's intuition on any of those things because he's, you know, damn near always right on everything like that. And so if the, you know, if we're going to try to go ahead and, you know, run the ball a couple times, we get a first down, you know, you call a timeout and you try to go ahead and, you know, use the last timeout or two that you have to try to get into field goal range. We've done that plenty of times as well. And, you know, we always go out there with the intent on moving the ball forward and trying to get ourselves an opportunity to score points. I mean, you know, to me, what I look at is the execution, you know, so if we execute and we get a first down and we gain 15 yards on a couple of plays, maybe we have an opportunity to use the timeout and go ahead and finish this situation, you know, attempting to move it into their area to try to score some points. But I don't worry about, you know, those other factors. You know, we're just trying to complement, you know, what we're doing. And sometimes it's best not to do that. You know, I mean, certainly there's a lot of factors that go into those decisions, and Bill always takes everything into account. And, you know, we still had an opportunity to run a couple good plays there and put ourselves in better position. And we certainly had an opportunity coming out of halftime to do the same thing. And we didn't get much done in either situation. So my job is to worry about the execution and focus on what we can do better to try to be more productive. And we need to do that better.
Was that a thorough enough answer for you?
That was pretty thorough.
What did he do repeatedly there that I did not pick up on the other day? Credit to Jim Louth for this one.
Well,
he said he's separating himself from the decision.
Yeah, he said it's
he's
his
putting
job
it all on Bill.
It's his job for the execution, and in terms of the management of the time, that's not on me. It's my job to execute in the number of plays that I'm given to run the offense, and you know, but I don't have any say in how many chances we get.
He might as well have said I have nothing to do with it. What? He should have just said, go ask Bill. I have nothing to do with it. That was the answer that he actually gave there. I know there were a lot of words, and it was a very pleasant exchange, and it was a very thorough answer about if they pick up a first down while running the football there, then they'll use the timeouts. But he said multiple times, beginning and end, well, you know, I never questioned Bill on that. That's Bill. 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 That was Bill's call, not my call. Hey, potential employers. Potential employers. I had nothing to do with that thing. That's not me. I'm aggressive. I'll get us into the end. Like, that's what it may have been. Just, oh, that was any bad coaching decision or any questionable coaching decision that people do look at and talk about? Josh McDaniels got nothing to do with that.
Well, that's the sign that, you know, there's a lot going on with this team right now beyond the inability to score a whole lot. That And we saw it a little bit from Kyle Van Noy after the game, too. There's a lot of that, you know, go talk to someone else. Yeah. Or that's on him. You know, this wasn't a rally around each other type of loss. This is not my fault.
We will send it back to the studio, Town Fair Tire Studios, Brendan Glasheen as your headlines. We'll be right back with Shaughnessy and or Belichick, some combination of the two. Don't go anywhere.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.